Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire, being joined by my mutual host, as always, Mr. Ronald Mann. Ronald, how are things going today, my brother?
Good, Don. Good. We're still getting hammered with rain out here. I can't wait for this wet summer to be done with, man.
Oh, you know, actually, I can tease you a little bit today. It's a nice warm 75 degrees, and I'm kind of loving it. But hey, I had
Thanks,
the heat,
buddy.
Man. So but you know, I love this aspect of the pair show that we took. You know, it's been getting great reviews. It's an opportunity for the world to see that, you know, there are people who persevere. There are people who that, you know, are given obstacles in life and give them the middle finger. And you and I happen to be one like that, but our guest today happens to be one like that too. He truly looked at life and whatever hand he was dealt, he wasn't going to let that betray him or perplex him, and he's come on to be one of the greatest and growing in the aspect of the sport. With that being said, welcome Nick Palmer to the show. Nick, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. I overheard you guys complaining about the weather, and I was thinking you guys should come to Minnesota for a little while and see what it's like up here for 8 months of winter and three months of brutally fire heat. I mean... But no, I'm doing well, man. I'm glad you guys had me on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, it's truly our honor, to be quite honest with you. You know, Nick, I'm an amputee. You know, Ronald's an amputee. You know, in all aspects of the show, we bring on people that were born with birth defects, born with certain attributes. How hard was it for you, Nick? You know, understanding as a child and learning and growing with the guidance of your parents how to accept where you were at in life and how it built you up to where you are today.
Well, you know, at a younger age, you really don't notice a difference. You know, I was born in a place so I didn't lose anything. It always seemed natural to me. I really wouldn't notice a difference until other kids and other people were pointing it out to me. But I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I do have one hand. You know, I think my parents, specifically their mother, she probably had a harder time with it than I did at times. I've always considered myself as a tough kid. I grew up, I just kind of stuck up for my brothers, stuck up for myself. And any chance I got, if it came a chance to it, you know, I would always be more than willing to throw down. And it's not always about winning. At that age, you know, it's about kind of just standing up for yourself or your family members and friends and stuff. You kind of beat the bullies up and beat them at their own game when, you know, they don't really want to fight. They just want to pick on you and have everyone laugh at you. But when it comes down to really throwing hands, or in my state, throwing a hand, it really makes a difference. You know, you really can't teach kids that these days because it's kind of frowned upon. So it's a different day, but it's the same concept, man. You meet the problem head on. Otherwise, you're just going to be bullied for the rest of your life.
Yeah, you know, I truly understand that. You know, there was a point in a time in your life where you decided to pick up and leave the regular aspect of life and jump into the sports world. You know, you were a kickboxer, you were an MMA fighter, and now you're into jiu-jitsu. What was it in the heart of Nick Palmer that inspired him to take that next step, no matter what life had given him to that point?
Well, when I was younger, I grew up right near a boxing gym. So a lot of my friends, they box locally as little kids, you know. And I remember as a kid asking my dad, like, you know, I really want to do this. I want to box, you know, because that's what it was back then, you know, in the early 90s. It was boxing, you know. MMA really wasn't around then. But my dad, he came to me, he's like, well, I don't know what they would do about a glove for your hand. And then we kind of just left it at that. You know, I continued with football and wrestling. But I always had this passion to fight, you know, especially growing up where I did. You either had to fight or you had to be a really good runner. And I was a fast kid, but I think I just preferred to stand and fight instead. It's just my, just who I am. And once I hit my 20s, my cousin started fighting MMA, and that's when I said, you know what, I know what we'll do about a glove. We'll design one and we'll make it happen. And that's just kind of where the story unfolded as far as my publicized fighting career began.
Yeah, I just got one more question before I kind of toss it to Ron, let him ask a couple. You know, you went on a six-fight win streak with five of the wins coming by, you know, first-round finishes. What does that do for the heart and the mind and the passion of, you know, and I'll just say it is because I'm an amputee. You know, as a as a fighter with one limb, you know, basically one and a half limbs, but yet you went on to, you know, have pride, passion, and perseverance as a fighter. What did it mean for you to be able to have those finishes? What did it instill in you as a man, not just as a warrior?
Well, you know, the story kind of started before that. Before I got my six fights, with five of them in the first round finish, I took a butt whooping, you know, my first five fights, and I lost every fight. And I would have my friends and family asking me, you know, why do you keep continuing to do this? You know, you're getting your butt whooped. I was watching the film afterwards, and I was seeing that I was slowly getting better at different aspects of the fight game. You know, there's so much that goes into it that, and I knew deep down that I was capable of more than going out there and losing five fights. You know, I knew deep down inside I was a true fighter. I've been fighting my whole life, and then once I went on that win streak, you know, to be honest with you, I felt like after, you know, the first five or six, you know, all I had to do was hit someone with my left hook and they were going to sleep, you know. So I brought that into a couple fights afterwards, and I got humbled again. You know, I got shown that, you know, I had opponents that would keep my left hook and keep coming at me, you know. That's when, you know, I knew that there was so much into this sport, you know, and I got into it at such a late age in my life where now I'm at a point now I just, you know, I just want to stay healthy. I'm 34. I want to stay healthy. I just want to compete in jiu-jitsu. You know, it's not the same as MMA fighting, but it's fun, and I'm having a good time. I get to coach kids with limb differences for nubability. I mean, I'm just enjoying life, you know, while I can still do what I can do.
Yes. I like how you worded that, too. I'm going to toss it over to Ronald Mann, let him ask you a couple questions since he's one of your buddies. But we got a lot more for you. Ronald?
Yeah, Nick, good to talk to you again, my friend. It's been a long, long time.
Yes, man. It's always a pleasure, Nick. Brother. We need to talk more, man. I know we're both busy guys. But
yeah, we got L.A. and everything else coming up soon, so we'll have to start catching up a little bit more. But we got you on the show, so let's talk about Nick Palmer. I want to go right back to the beginning, and you touched a little bit on your youth. You know, this is part of the Fighter's Voice that Don is putting out here and allowing us to highlight ourselves on. Most people don't understand what it's like to have some kind of limb mobility issue or limb difference and then come up the ranks as a fighter. So I want to kind of dig into, you're born with this, correct?
Correct. Yes, it was.
Okay. And so I'm seeing that distinct line. There's about half of our guests so far have been born into it, and then about half of us had to make choices on it. And so how do you think, like, coming up, you know, you're 36 now, so being an amputee hasn't been cool for very long. You know, you didn't see Blade Runners coming around. You didn't see The Rock being a below-knee amputee in a major movie. For a long time, we were still kind of pushed to the side and not given the respect that we had deserved and earned. How was that for you growing up, like right from the beginning?
You know, for me, it's a lot different. And you know, I've met amputees now that I've lost their limbs later in life, and I always felt like it would be much harder, you know, because you get used to your situation. You know, if you're fully limbed, you're used to that from birth, you know, and then you have to lose something and then relearn how to do anything in life, you know. I always thought that that would be much more difficult. I don't know how I would handle that. It might be a little bit easier now that I know amputees, but being born, I've never looked at myself as any different than anybody else. You know, I figured I'm just missing a hand. It's no big deal. People might say I might not be able to do this or that, but I'm going to go out there and try anyway. That's something I'm into. And a lot of times I succeeded and did very well. So I never really even considered myself as a para fighter or anything. It was never brought to my attention until it was directly pointed out to me, you know, and you see kids pointing at you, and then it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm missing my right hand. But to me, it's never really been a big deal. I mean, sure, as a kid, it was tough, and you notice that you're different than everybody else. But other than that, man, you just kind of – you either let it make you or break you. And for me, I've never been the type to just let anything break me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So how did your family deal with this? Were they resistant to put you in sport? Did they hesitate, or did they throw you right in with other family and other crew? Like, you were talking about wrestling. Earlier, we were talking about, well, you know, you can't really trade hands with people. You can't encourage kids to grow up tough like that. But I beg to differ, dude. Like, I think every kid should grow up wrestling, because that tenacity that sport teaches you, you may get suplexed, but I guarantee the person that just got suplexed will get back up if they're a good wrestler. And that's something you can give to kids. That's a gift. So how was that for you growing up?
No.
What kind of sports did you do, and how did that affect your growth and development?
So from an early age, my father, Patrick Palmer, he's no longer with us, but he instilled in me at a very young age that I could do anything I put my mind to. And he got me off wrestling, I believe, when I was about 7 years old. I wrestled from the age of 7 to 10. And then after that, it just kind of, when I first got into wrestling, you know, I got there to the first wrestling practice. I'm like, man, this is not wrestling. Like, where are the ropes, and where are the turnbuckle I'm going to shove someone's head into? You know, because I grew up watching, you know, WWF. You know, so I got there. I'm like, but I stuck it out for 3 years, and it was probably the toughest thing I ever did. You know, wrestling was just, it was a tough sport. You know, it was you and your opponent, and you either got pinned or you didn't and lost on points. I mean, you either handed out the butt whooping or you got the butt whooping. But at an early age, it's usually you on the receiving end, unless you're an athletic freak, you know. And I really wasn't that much of a freak, but it was my parents that kind of pushed me. They never really held me back. You know, I got into football after my older brother started returning kicks at, you know, his football games and stuff. I wanted to play football. That's what I really fell in love with. So I played football for the next, you know, 10, 15 years. And I played basketball, baseball. I played every sport. So my parents really never said, hey, I don't think you should do this. It wasn't until I wanted to start boxing that they're like, and I don't know if they didn't figure I could just throw a glove on my right hand, or they just didn't want me to get in there and get hurt, you know?
Yeah. It sounds probably like a little bit of both, parents trying to protect their kid, but, you know, kids got to grow up and do their thing too. So jumping forward a little bit, when did you start looking at the combat arena?
I was at, so my cousin Mike Psycho Schmidt, he started fighting in New Richmond, Wisconsin, probably 45 minutes from where I'm at now. And I went out to his fight, and I saw him do what he did, and he was putting guys away, and I'm like, man, I know I can do this. You know, I grew up with my cousin. We used to fight all the time as kids, and the ring announcer asked if there was anyone in the crowd. This is before Wisconsin was sanctioned, so it was like still like almost old-school UFC rules. And I'm like, how many people up there want to sign up and fight guys that have no experience? You have to have no experience in fighting as far as, like, you know, being trained in jiu-jitsu or kickboxing. And I signed up. And there was a few others that signed up that night. The show was going to go down. Well, everyone else had backed out, and they asked me. I knew the promoter at the time. He said, do you still want to fight someone that actually trains a little bit? You know, he's not a beast or anything, but he's got a little bit more skill than you. I said, absolutely. You know, throw me in there. I get in there, and I I wanted to hit the left hook that years later I would infamously just put people away with. I swung. As soon as I swung, he took me down, took my back. Minute 19 seconds into it, I got choked unconscious. You know, I had so little jiu-jitsu experience that as soon as I thought about tapping out, it was too late. And I remember waking up on the mat thinking to myself, why am I resting here? Afterwards, you know, I didn't even know I was out. EMT is telling me, yeah, you went to sleep, and I didn't believe him. It wasn't until I saw the footage afterwards, and I'm like, yeah, no wonder why my wife doesn't want me to do this anymore. But I stuck with it, you know. I went hard into training, you know, and, you know, sure, I got my butt whooped a few more times, but, you know, I eventually caught some glory, and then it was given an opportunity to train and coach with Nullability Athletics. So, I mean, it all worked out for me.
You know, I kind of want to take just a step backwards before we can progress forward. You know, you were teased quite a bit as a kid. I didn't go through that as a child because I didn't lose my limb until I was much older in life, but I still went through that aspect of life. You know, that part of life in society is cruel, and I think it's unfair and unjust, but you can't change the way the populace is. You can't even understand them half the time. You know, what was it about the mat that truly allowed you to feel that total freedom that you've been looking for? Yeah, you competed in many sports, and yeah, you were tremendous at everything that you've done, but since hitting the mat, it seems like it's reinstilled or reinvigorated a certain part of Nick Palmer. What would that be in your thoughts, sir?
Well, for me, you know, it's the old cliche. Once you get on the mat, you can't lie to anybody. You can't lie to your opponent about who you are, how tough you are, because it's all going to get said and done within those few minutes of rolling. You know, and I took a lot of butt whoopings, you know, especially grappling. You know, I didn't get my blue belt till, you know, December of 2016, but I was grappling a few years before that and had some wrestling experience. But there are guys that are much higher level than me that they just put it to you sometimes, you know, and it either humbles you and you're like, okay, I want to get better, or you can't take it and you quit. And for me, I'd love the fact that jiu-jitsu, like almost, I don't know, probably at least 50% of the moves that are taught to me, I have to find a way to make them my own. And so that's what I do. You know, I develop my own moves. Yes, my coach teaches me and he gives me a lot of tips, but a lot of times I have to figure out a way to make it my own because I have the one hand. You know, so different collar grips are different. Sometimes I can only use the one hand, but I've found at least probably 15 different ways so far to choke somebody out with just one hand. And that's what I love most about it, is because you can't lie to your opponent when you hit the mat. You know, you can't sit there and say, oh, I'm this big, tough guy, because you're both about to find out how tough you really are once you hit the mat. And that's what I love about jiu-jitsu, is because it relates to life so much, you know. Yeah, you can bullcrap your way through life and feed people stories, but the truth comes out on the mats every time. You know, and that's what I probably love about it most.
You know, I have a tremendous young friend in life, and he happens to be my son, one of my son's good friends, and that's being Nick Newell. You know, I watched a young, just like you, you know, watched a young man grow up, very athletic, very sports-oriented, stepped up to, you know, into a higher promotion, you know, and even his opponent, you know, they were saying, oh, I got to fight a one-arm man. This is going to be easy. This is going to be that. A minute and 30-something seconds later, Nick Newell had him choked out and on the mat. What does it do for fighters like you that, I mean, you were the predecessor to the, I mean, you were before Nick Newell. You were already in the sport competing. So what did it do for you to see people like Nick Newell step up in such prestigious promotions and correlate and put himself on a world level as a warrior?
Well, for me, I actually I started competing in MMA shortly after Nick Newell. And so when I was first getting into it, I thought there might be someone else out there like me that fought. And so I Googled one-handed MMA fighter, and I came across the name Nick Newell, and I ended up friending him on Facebook, hitting him up. And he was genuine human being, man. He reached back to me, you know, that's how I knew he was a real person. You know, gave me tips. He doesn't have to use a glove for his missing limb because it's closer to his elbow, so it's pretty much an elbow strike. For me, I needed the glove, so I had to get one made. But it's just Nick Newell, to see him on that stage, it's awesome, and it's great for the sport. And I love seeing it. You know, it's sad to see him lose like that, but the guy is probably one of the most hardworking guys within the sport that I know. I met him a few years ago out in New York. Great guy. He did the seminar at Grappler's Heart, and it was for people with basically limb differences or disabilities. And I hate that word. I wish I had a better word for it, but I really don't at the time. But to see him on the platform, it was awesome to see him there, you know, and given a shot to show that, you know, he's world class, you know. It didn't go his way, and that's unfortunate, but sometimes that's just kind of how the sport goes, you know. I mean, you see where you're – see who you really are once you take those losses. And I hope that we see Nick Newell given another shot. I hope he keeps working hard. And, you know, maybe one day we will see him in the UFC.
You know, I believe we will. But, you know, through Nick Newell and through yourself, inspiration was created and guided. You know, our hearts are what control, you know, an aspect of who we are, whether in sport or in life. But I tell you what, you know, one thing that really impressed me was you went out to California last year, you took home the gold at the Abu Dhabi Grand Slam in L.A., both in the para and non-para divisions. You know, you basically have done what Nick Newell has done in the cage, but on the mat. When you sit back and you think about those moments in L.A. for the Abu Dhabi Grand Slam, what was most prevalent to you, Nick?
Well, one thing that sticks out most to me about L.A. and being on those mats is that, honestly, I know I won my matches and my fights, whatever you want to call them, but at the same time, I got my butt whooped. In every single match, I was down either 11-0 or 15-0, but it goes back to that what you were saying, man, it's about heart. And my coach texted me beforehand. He's like, I know you got heart. Just keep fighting. And those words were going through my head at the time. And my first match, I'm down, I think it was either 11 or 15 or nothing with 27 seconds to go. And we kind of rolled out of bounds, so they had to replace us. That's how I knew how much time was left. I glanced over the clock. The dude's got full mount on me. I ended up sinking in an Ezekiel choke. And the dude was so tough that he just refused to tap, and he ended up going to sleep with 5 seconds left in the match. So first thing that sticks out to me is that I've got so much I need to learn. I've got so much work that I really need to do because I'm not a point guy. You know, I'm a submission guy, but, you know, it's not always going to be there, you know. And I'm just hoping to keep working and stay healthy and get better. You know, that's all I really want to do.
I'm going to toss the mic to Ronald, yeah, Mann, because I know he's probably chomping at the bit. Ronald?
Dude, it's amazing. I listen to these stories, and it opens up so many different avenues I want to jump in. Like, we've only got an hour, but I keep continually hearing things. Okay, we got to go to cage fighting. Now we got to go to wrestling. Now we got to go here. Okay. an hour is just not long enough to have people on the show, Don. We got to work on that.
Yes, sir.
Nick, so, yeah, let's get into the L.A. Grand Slam then. And I haven't talked to you about this. So, Don, when we went out there, I'm running around. I'm helping everybody out and doing a lot of logistics of it. And
all of a sudden I start hearing the words Nick one, Nick one, Nick one. And I wasn't able to see the actual fight. But when you got back off the mat and I found out that you choked that dude unconscious, I don't know if you remember my expression when we were talking, but my jaw just about hit the floor. Like I couldn't believe, because you were getting run all over the mat, but the tenacity that you had to keep going and keep going and keep going no matter what, I think that shows well for para fighters.
No, it absolutely does, man. It's like we were born with a different heart, you know. We feel like, I think, at least for me, that we have to give a little bit more, you know. And that's what I did, you know. I just kept giving and giving and giving more, you know. And, you know, the dude went to sleep, and he ended up waking up on the mat. Like, he was mad, man. Like, he was upset. He didn't believe
that
he went to sleep. But the dude was snoozing, but... I mean, the dude's a beast. Like, I was following him afterwards. He was hitting up, like, almost all of those Grand Slam tours and winning them, you know? Like, and
nice.
The fact that I submitted him, I had a chance to talk to him afterwards. I'm like, you know, if I had a chance to roll with you again, you would probably mop the floor with me, and I wouldn't catch that choke again. Because it was just a sneaky choke, man. The Ezekiel choke, you know, I live by it. You know, I'm missing the right hand, so it just sneaks in there a little sneakier, and it's quick, man. If you don't tap, you have like a 3-second window, and if you don't tap out, you're going to sleep. That's the beauty of chokes. That's why I love chokes so much. Is just if you don't tap, well, your brain's going to cut you off because it's time to go to sleep.
Yes. Yeah. So do you want to get into that? Like, I know each jiu-jitsu is our own art. You know, we learn jiu-jitsu, but we adapt it to our bodies, we adapt it to our style, to our mentality, to our spirit. Do you want to touch base a little bit? Maybe tell some of the up-and-coming fighters how you've adapted some of your game to what is perceived as a disability and a limitation to you, but now is becoming choking people unconscious when they take a little bit too long to tap out.
You know, that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu is... if you're missing a limb or you're missing a hand or a leg, you find a way to adapt, you know, just with anything in life, you know, and that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu. But with jiu-jitsu, you kind of get to make things your own, you know, so it gives you an avenue to think a little differently. I always look at my having one hand, especially with the Ezekiel choke. I mean, it sneaks in there so quick that, you know, my best friend, he calls it the cheater choke. Because he hates it so much. He won't even roll with me anymore. My buddy Marcel Anderson, I'm going to call him out real quick. But he won't even roll with me anymore because he's afraid to get caught. That show. You know, you hear about it in the gym and you catch a few guys. It's sneaky. And it's kind of a cheater choke, but at the same time, hey, I'm looking at you. Let me cut off one of your hands or give up one of your hands and let's see how well you do. So you can call it a cheater choke, but no. I got one hand, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they can call it a cheater choke all they want, but did they tap?
If they didn't tap, they went to sleep, my brother.
That's tremendous. I love that aspect. You know, one thing when I sit here and I listen to this interview, the one thing that really comes to my mind is, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, you had to have a glove because it's a little bit further than Nick Knowles and past the elbow. But we interviewed a young lady that probably stole my heart out of all the shows I've ever done, and that being little Ella, you know. And she just got back from Camp Nubability. And, you know, to hear her talk about her favorite thing, her favorite aspect is to choke people out, you know, how did you define that aspect of you being so, I mean, because Ezekiel choke is your favorite choke. How did you figure out that aspect was a key arsenal in the artillery of Nick Palmer?
Well, I'm sitting there rolling one day, and my coach is like, Ezekiel, Ezekiel. And I had no idea what he's talking about. And then, so he showed me the move. It was from then on that... the Ezekiel choke, it's become legendary, at least at my gym. Like, nobody at my gym, I don't get it anymore because everybody knows. They're like, they know it's coming.
Yeah.
You know. And so they're defending it the whole time. Like, they see me and they feel me. I hear it here, like, I am not letting him Ezekiel choke me. Or I'm not letting him Ezekiel choke me again, you know. You sneak it in there. And it was my coach, man, that told me that. Tom Smith, he's a third-degree black belt under Pedro Sauer. Probably hands down the best coach I ever had, you know. But back to Ella. I love Ella. I met Ella a few years back, and I remember the first time she got on the mats. And she's like, I've never done this before. I've never grappled. I've never wrestled. And she fell in love with it immediately. And she went home, signed up for a jiu-jitsu gym. You know, this is like 3 years ago, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. And she's been doing jiu-jitsu ever since. And I love following her. Her dad, Kevin, is always messaging me on Twitter with a few of her other grappling coaches. We're critiquing her. You know, we're not like, hey, you're doing great. And we're not blowing smoke up, you know, the parents' butts. We're like, hey, she could do this a little bit better. She could do that a little bit better. She's looking good. She's improving. She's doing very well. But, yeah, I love Ella, man. She is amazing. She has got the sweetest heart ever. You know, we lost a coach this last year, Kevin Kraft, and he was like a brother to me in opening ceremony for lovability. She saw me crying, and she came up to me later. She's like, I wanted to hug you so bad when you were crying, and I didn't even remember that I was crying. I'm like, when was I crying? She's like, I don't cry. She's like, when they were talking about Kevin. And she's like, I'm going to hug you now anyway. But she is a sweetheart, you know. She don't, like, hurt anybody, but she loves jiu-jitsu and she loves choking people out. I can't wait to see where that girl ends up in the para world because, I mean, I think she's, like, 10, 11, maybe 12. But she's a beast on that. And I love seeing that, you know. I love spreading the jiu-jitsu word, man. Jiu-jitsu is like Jesus to me, man. You know, you got a lot of preachers going around preaching the word of gospel. I like preaching the word of jiu-jitsu because it changed my life, you know, and changes your life.
You know, yeah, I brought up Ella for a reason. She's 11, and she's a very articulated young beast. I'm just going to put it that way. But, you know, and she's going to be the future of the para sport, you know, and hopefully by then it won't even be considered a para sport. It'll just be considered the norm like everything else, you know, and that's what our intent is. But you look at what's transpired through Ella, you look at what's transpired with the others that you know, give the best possible limb different coaching and mentoring that you know, they can get at Camp Nobility. But what does it do for the heart of Nick Palmer, the man, when you sit back, you realize you've never accepted I can't do. You never said I'm not going to do. And then lastly, you've accomplished, but then you turn around and you give back to others in a way that nobody else can. When you look at that, what truly is the intent and the heart of Nick Palmer? What does all of this mean to you when you correlate it all together and you just got that moment where you sit back in your chair and you throw your legs up and you get a look back at what you've been, what you're creating, and where you're going? How has it defined you?
The first thing I think of when you say that is a Mark Twain quote. You know, the two most important days of your life are the days you were born and the day you figure out why. And when I found Nubability, I found out the reason why I was born the way I was. Because as a kid, yeah, sure, I might say, hey, it was no big deal. I made it through it. But I always asked why. And then it wasn't until Nubability that I found out why. So I can teach kids who are just like me or who are having trouble in life, and I can give them that little bit of boost. You know, teach them how to defend themselves. Because when it's a crazy world. You know, you never know when you're going to have to defend yourself or defend someone you care about or just at least stand up for yourself. And sometimes those altercations become physical. And in a physical situation, you know, I'm confident that I've taught at least 20 kids now how to choke somebody out if they really needed to, you know, how to defend themselves. And for me, that's what's important to me. It's not at all about me or what I've done or what I have accomplished. You know, I love life. I'm always going to love life. I love competing. I love winning. Sometimes you learn a little bit more by losing, and you need to do that. But as long as you give it all, it really doesn't matter if you win or lose. As long as you're giving it all and you can go home at night and be like, hey, man, that dude just got me. He was a better athlete, you know? I mean, ultimately, that's all I really care about is showing people that you can do something, even if you've got 1,000 people telling you you can't. Try it. Hmm. And if you fail, try it again, you know?
Yeah. Nick, let's go. And I'm seeing like a theme here, Don, over the last couple weeks. Now ability is coming up strong, and I've known Sabrina Riesling for many, many years now. She's one of my favorite human beings on this planet. And she grew up and was a wrestler. She lost her leg to cancer when she was a kid, and then grew up and was wrestling in high school with her team. And then she was teaching there at Nevability. She always spoke so highly of the program. I want to touch base on that a little bit, because there are, like, when I talk about I'm fighting, I'm doing this for the next generation. I mean, you know, we're establishing that para-jiu-jitsu here in America, we're establishing these combat sports as para-fighters and para-athletes. But for me, I see the next generation coming up. How did you get involved in Nubability, and you want to talk about it a little bit more?
So I got involved with Nubability. I reached out to them. This is my 6th year, so I reached out to them about 7 years ago, right before their first camp. I was on a emailing list through Jim Abbott, who's a baseball pitcher that I followed as a kid. Growing up, he's the only person I ever knew to have a hand just like mine. And I was following his emailing list, and I got an email from Jana and Nubability and Sam talking about the camp. And as soon as I read that email, I'm like, I want to be a part of this, you know. I've played all sports. You know, I'm basically sending them my resume, like, I need to be a part of this. Like, I've got accolades. I don't really talk about myself a lot, but I've done every sport that there is. You know, I grew up in Minnesota. I've done every sport. Let me be a part of this. And it wasn't until the following year that they had a wrestling program, and they brought me on, and I've been a part of them ever since. You know, we do every sport from lacrosse to grappling to basketball, baseball. I mean, we even have dance and cheer and tumbling for the girls that don't want to get too physical. I mean, it's a great organization. I ended up finding them by chance or coincidence, and I'm the type of guy that doesn't believe in coincidences, so I believe it happened for a reason. You know, I found out my why, and, you know, I love it. You know, just to get down to Southern Illinois every year to teach some kids how to choke people out, I mean, I love it. And then I listened to your guys' interview last week with Ella, and she was talking about how she just loves to choke people out. Like, I laughed so hard. I love it, you know. And grapplers, we can appreciate something like that. You know, it's not the everyday people like, oh, my God, she was talking about choking someone out. That is not funny. Like, we get it, because we get choked out, or we tap, or we choke people out, or they tap. You know, it's a different world, and I love it. And Nubability, like, changed my life. I'll be a part of that organization for as long as they'll have me.
That's fantastic, brother. You know, last week, Don and I were talking. We typically talk a little bit after the show, and Don called me up, and he was blown away. You know, that was a very touching episode with Elon. Like, she's a powerful, powerful young lady, and he asked me what I thought of the show, and I told him we just interviewed a world champion. And, like, the way that she spoke about you and Langston and Nubability, you know, having you guys guide our next generation of para fighters, you know, we know that it's in good hands now. So what do you see here? Like, we're looking at, Don has been able to get Professor J.W. Wright to offer us para categories. You fought with us in the UAE Grand Slam last year, and they were the first tournament to allow para categories on the world stage, and now Fuji is allowing us to have para categories in all their tournaments. Where do you see combat sports and para-combat sports going for us?
Man, it's limitless for me, you know. And by limitless, I mean limitless. I'm a little fun. Anyway, oh, not always as funny as I think I am. But, no, seriously, man, it's endless, you know. I mean, a lot of times, like I said, it goes back to you can stand there and stare at your opponent from across the mat and say, oh, he's got one leg. I'm going to take him. But it's not until you really hit the mat where you find out who's going to take who. I mean, there's no lying on the mat. And honestly, I mean, for me anyway, I've only got the one hand. It's different with other guys. I don't know guys that grapple with both legs missing, freaking half arms, you know, and they go out there and put work on guys. But for me, I mean, it's endless. It really is. And at some point, it's going to reach a point where it's not going to matter. And ultimately, it doesn't matter how many limbs you got. Man, I get choked out all the time by guys that have limbs, don't have limbs. That never makes a difference to me. I'm still going to go out there. I don't care what belt rank you're wearing. I'm going out there, and I'm protecting my neck every time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It inspires me. You know, I got to tell you, Nick, the way you speak about it is so intentful. You know, last week, I'm like you. I look up things that correlate in my mind or I get a thought. So I looked up a fighter that, you know, stole my heart. I actually watched this MMA fighter that didn't have any arms or legs. And I watched some of the harsh criticism that was thrown his way as he was critiqued, but you know, he still went out there. Even though he lost, he still competed. He never gave up. And just looking at the aspect of it's not our shell that defines us. And I've said this on the show before, it truly is our heart. You know, I don't think society truly understands what a true intentful heart is. I see that in you. I see that with what you give to the sport. I see that what you give in life. And now you're doing it with Nubability, and you've created such, all of you guys over there have created such a tremendous aspect and outlet for the future, not just of BJJ practitioners, excuse me, or any aspect of life. You've given hope and light to many through that camp. What does it mean to be a part of that with Langston and the others that are given, I guess the best way to say it, a beam of light, a beam of hope to children who have never had that before?
You know, that is something that you really can't explain. I mean, you feel it. There are no words to describe what you get from showing kids, you know, from any sport and giving them the confidence to go on with their lives. And, you know, I'm 34 now. I know Ronald called me 36 earlier, but I'm not going to get mad at him for that because I am.
Oh,
I'm bald.
Shit, dude, you're talking to Don and I. You're a youngster, man. Shit.
But anyway, you know, it's not about that. You know, what I've come to realize is that the 95% of the people you encounter every day in your life are just dumb. They're just ignorant. They're uneducated. And they don't deal with what we deal with, see what we see. You know, you'll see them staring or pointing or they have comments. Oh, Nick Maynard should be in there fighting. But yet, they're sitting on their couch not doing a damn thing themselves. And they're going to try to criticize someone who's trying to go after life. It makes no sense to me, but we're going to deal with that no matter what. And it only makes what we do that much sweeter. Because it's like, boom, I got you. I choked this fool out with one hand. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to deal with that no matter what you go through in life. Someone's going to try to criticize you and say, oh, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. But they go back home and they're sitting on their couch and they're not doing anything with their lives.
No, but you're creating greatness in others. And that's what's so, I mean, you could look at your fight record, you could look at, you know, what we've talked about on the show today, and you can truly just take away and be truly inspired by that. But like I said, to get back and inspire the youth, and, you know, whether they're in the sport or not, or just in any aspect, you know, it's an attribute that society no longer really cares about. So it makes individuals like you that do give back that much more rare. Who other than your father, who was the main intent in the life of Nick Palmer that led you down this road to not just being a gladiator, but being that human being that had the heart to open up who you are and share your path with these kids coming up?
You know, that really falls on my mother. She was the toughest person I've ever met in my entire life. What she went through in her life is just amazing. She never not believed in me. She always told me to be who I am. She always believed in me. And, you know, I owe it all to her. I mean, honestly, I remember stories of her growing up in the inner cities, her having to fight and send off, you know, 3-4 men, and she would throw down. That's really who I get it all from, is my mother. I'm a mama's boy at heart. You know, she passed away. It's going on almost 15 years now. I owe everything to her. Everything I do is for her. You know, I gave my daughter my mom's middle name. It's just everything I do is for my mother. Like, I'm 100%.
I love that aspect. You know, Ronald, I'm going to toss the microphone back to you. You're being a little quiet over there, buddy. You know, I know some of these stories kind of take you back because, you know, you live this world. But, you know, what is it here to, you know, how does it make you feel hearing one of your true brothers explain all aspects of what he's brought to not just the sport but to these children?
And this is powerful. We're so fortunate that you're allowing us to have this show, Don. Because, you know, you've increased the knowledge tenfold in society. For so many years, people like Nick have been out there fighting and banging and doing it on their own terms without the general knowledge and support, I would say. And now this opens up one more avenue to, and Nick, you talked about it, brother. You talked about there's stupid people out there everywhere. Yes, I agree on that. There's way big dummies everywhere. But the brilliance is now that we're out there and showing, you know, when I go to Yamasaki Academy, all the kids run up and all the new kids run up and they're like, hey, I heard you have a robot leg. Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. And so people like you going out there fighting and banging, setting a high level of expectation, not just sitting back on your laurels. You know, you could have just sat on your couch now. You could be done, man. Like, you've done amazing things so far as a kickboxer, as an MMA fighter. One of my friends watched one of your fights. I've been telling her about you coming up, and Jamie called me earlier today. You knocked a dude out in about 45 seconds, and she about dropped her phone. I told her, we don't play. We're not here to play around. Like, this is legitimate. These are combat arts, and we're real fighters. So, you know, you accomplished huge feats and goals in the para-combat sports and against able-bodied people as well. Where do you see yourself going next? Like, I know you have a good family. You work. You've got all kinds of responsibilities. Do you see yourself continuing to fight in MMA, kickboxing, para jiu-jitsu?
First off, I want to take back from infamous Conor McGregor and put it into the para division. We're not here to take part. We're here to take over. You know, like, seriously.
Yes.
Because that's the heart we have. You know, and like I go back to saying, you can stand across from your opponent and say, hey, I'm going to beat this guy. It's going to be no problem. But it's a different story once you hit the mats. You never know. But for me, where I see myself going, I just want to stay healthy. You know, I suffered a herniated disc in my neck a few months ago, and it took me out for a few months. I was training to make a comeback for another MMA fight. I wasn't able to make that happen. I just want to be healthy, though. I just want to do jiu-jitsu. I want to compete in tournaments. I hope to compete until the day I die, man. You know, honestly, I love jiu-jitsu that much that if it's not a part of my life, I'm really not living. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to continue on with Nubability then. So you've been there for how many years, Nick?
This is my sixth year. It's their seventh year that they've done camp. I will be part of Nubability probably for the rest of my life, man. Even if I were to pass the torch and give it to some younger up-and-coming grappling coaches, I will take a different role within Nubability because I love what they do. They change lives. Not only do we change the lives of our kids, which is most important, but we change the lives of our coaches too. You know, a lot of our coaches, we come in and we've never met anyone like ourselves. You know, like the first year I was there. And so, you know, you get a chance to meet and talk with them and hear their experiences. And I will be part of Nubability until the day I die. If not, then something similar.
You know, Nick, I got one more, and then I'll let Ron last one. You know, like you said, an hour is just not long enough on these shows. We're gonna have to figure
yeah.
this out. You know, it's mind blowing to me because, you know, I don't know why these shows weren't done to begin with. To be quite honest with you, you know, we had a Para Network that we had a show on. Ronald had did that, and you know, from that day forth, you know, I knew the story wasn't being told well, so I wanted to bring that aspect into my life. My sponsors wanted me to take over that show from the other network it was on. You know, and I find this to be so tremendous. And, you know, I look at my life and I realize that I didn't start living until after I lost my leg. But in your situation, you were born into life like this. You took the three P's that I always say every week, pride, passion, and perseverance, and you instilled even greater qualities in them. You know, you have inspired many. You have gone on to compete. You've gone on to do great things. What does it mean? Because you've truly created a legacy in the life of not just a para fighter, but in the life of your family and in all that surround themselves with you. What does it truly mean for you, Nick, to just relish and look back over your shoulder and realize what you have accomplished and look back at all the opportunities that you had that you didn't say no to? What is in that heart of yours that truly has you giving all of you?
You know, honestly, I hope someday, you know, I think most people anyway, they want to live a life where even when you pass, even when you're gone, there's still stories to be told about you. You know, for my case, you know, I have one daughter. I hope someday she has kids that, like, hey, my grandpa fought and did this and battled through this or that, and I hope they can look back on it and whatever they're dealing with, whether they fight or they don't, I hope it gives them some kind of hope to push forward, you know, because life's going to throw roadblocks in front of you at every turn you take. You know, that's just how it works. You can either give in and give up, or you can push forward and find another route. And I hope someday that, you know, my grandkids can look back and do that, or my great-grandkids, you know, or I want to live forever. You know, honestly, that's what I hope. Yeah, I don't think I will ever succeed that, but at the same time, I'm going to try for it, you know. I don't know where life's going to take me from today or tomorrow, but I'm going to keep training. I'm going to keep competing. And I'm going to keep asking for the best guys in the world to compete against. And hopefully someday, you know, I have someone that when I'm no longer here that says, hey, you know, my grandfather is this. So I'm gonna keep pushing forward. That's honestly what I hope for. You know, just to give someone some kind of hope to dig deep, because that's what, to me, that's what life's all about, is digging deep.
You truly have proven that. You truly have proven that time and time again. I'm going to toss it to Ronald. I know he's got to get out of here shortly. We'll let him ask a couple of questions, and then we'll go ahead and wrap the episode. Ronald?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I appreciate that. Nick, I'm just going to go ahead and give you the platform. Don created this show as the Fighter's Voice, is to be here for the fighter. So I want to thank you for coming on, brother. Like, we haven't talked for, it's been 9 or 10 months, but it's amazing to have family like you. You know, as we develop this and this sport continues to grow, it amazes me how we grow our family together. No matter what, like, always one of us is willing to step up and help and give a hand to the other person. So it's been good to talk to you, my friend. I'm glad you came on tonight.
No, I'm honored that you guys had me, man. I appreciate it. Give me a chance to give a little bit of a story about myself, nubability, you know, jujitsu. I love all that. I hope that people will see from this interview that maybe if you're struggling, you know, dig a little deeper, keep pushing forward, never give up. Check out Nubability Athletics. If you're not a part of it, you don't follow them on Facebook, you probably should, because it's life-changing. A shout-out to my coach, Tom Schmitz. I love the guy like a father. He is the best coach in the Midwest, easily. And I would go as far as saying the United States, but I don't want to upset Ronald and his coach. But at the same time, I love my coach, man. You know, I love my teammates. I love Minnesota. I hope these guys find jiu-jitsu, because if you don't find jiu-jitsu, life is just going to pass you by and you're going to miss out.
Yeah, you truly will. You know, I'm extremely honored you came on the show today. It's tremendous for me to be able to, even though I am, you know, handicapable in life and a para athlete, it's truly inspiring for me to be able to share individuals like you. You know, it truly is an honor to have you on the show today and have you share bits and pieces of your story, as there's so much to you. I think we can actually do a second show with him, Ronald. You know,
yeah,
to hear you speak. Yeah, right? To hear about...
Hey! If you guys need a third co-host, hit me up.
I like it.
Hey,
like
we
it.
Will do, because you never know when we might need one, because I'll tell you what,
no,
we need to add
that
little Minnesota accent to the show.
And Don, he talks more than I do,
so
I think it'd be easy.
Never mind, you're making fun of the Minnesota accent, eh?
Oh, no, I think it's great, man. Hey, If you heard me talk real slow, I have a southern draw. I just got to put my radio voice on to do the show. But, you know, we'll just leave it at that. You know, it truly was an honor, sir, to be able to show who you are.
You guys.
You know,
I appreciate what you guys are doing, man. You're giving the platform for parafighters and other fighters. I need to follow the show more. I hope you guys are happy again, because I'm sure I'm going to have other stories of choking people out in L.A. And, Rod, I hope to see you out there, man.
You will, brother.
I'm
looking forward
medals.
To it, man. We're getting excited. Yeah. Yep. We'll be dropping bodies, able bodies as well, para, but I see us doing well. The program in L.A. is getting to be very swell. We got to focus on this Fuji tournament coming up. And then two weeks later, after I fight Fuji, I'm flying out to L.A. So, you know, Don set this inaugural tournament up for Fuji, and it's going to be an honor for me to compete in that. But, guys, I got to get running. Nick, it's been good talking to you, brother. I look forward to seeing you soon, man, shaking your hand, give you a big hug, man.
All right, sounds good, brother. I'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, Nick, before you go, I'll wrap things up with you. Ronald, we'll talk to you, brother. I'll get with you next week on next week's show, and get in there before Yamasaki tears you a new one, my friend. All right. Well, you know, Nick, like what we talked about, you know, life is about giving and getting. And you truly are a person that gives in life, and that truly inspires me. You know, it's one of the main reasons why we did this show. You know, I changed the form of, you know, people calling me handicapped to handicapable, because I'll climb the cage with the best of the 20-year-olds you got out there. I've always had a, you know, point to prove in my life that my life became better once I lost my limb. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. But as Ronald said earlier, we've had an opportunity to bring on people that were born in the life and, you know, live through it and strive from it, you know, and we had to relearn. But we both, all of us come together in a 360, and we correlate the parallel world into the aspect that it truly needs to be. It needs to be one voice, it needs to be heard strong, and it needs to be heard worldwide. You know, what we're all doing on the mats or in the cage or in the ring or wherever it may be is instrumental to society, the sport, and humanity. And it's been tremendous having you on the show today. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. And if there's any friends or family or social media sites or sponsors or just anything else that you'd like to add on the program today, brother, the floor is yours, Nick.
I appreciate you guys having me, man. I appreciate what you guys are doing. I hope you guys have me on again in the next few weeks or so, see where I'm at. I want to give a shout-out to my wife, Stevie, my daughter, Alyssa. They never given up on me, and I appreciate that about them more than anything. My coaches at Spartan Martial Arts. I would say probably the best gym in the nation, but I don't want to piss anybody off. I just love everybody, man, and I love choking people out. I love teaching kids how to defend themselves, and like I said, thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it, and I hope to talk to you guys again soon.
Oh, you'll most definitely be back on the show sooner than you think, but, you know, the honor was all ours. You know, we try to share the best of life the best way we can, and you truly are a fine example of that. Once again, Nick, I truly appreciate you joining the show. We'll get you back on in a couple weeks. And, hey, you never know. We may even have you on as a mutual host and grow in that aspect, too. You never know. Hey, life is about change and evolving. And we'll try to add you in and let you do a couple shows with us and see how you like it and see where it goes. But until then, thank you for blessing my show and blessing life as you have. And keep doing what you're doing with Nubability, because it truly is inspiring the future of where we all want to be. You're a true asset in life, my brother. Thank you, and God bless.
Thanks, brother. God bless you too, man. And you're a true asset yourself, man. Let's talk soon.
All right. I appreciate that, and we will. And I'll shoot you my number so you have it if you ever want to talk. But to let you know, this link is a permanent link. It never goes away. I archive it, so if you want to go back and listen to the show or share the show, it's there for the doing.
Sounds good, brother. You have a good night, man.
All right, you too, brother. God bless. Os.
All right. God.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Nick Palmer, a truly tremendous individual. You know, each and every week I keep getting more and more inspired by these individuals. They truly touch my heart. You know, I've been in a certain dark place in my life, and I realized that we can cry about it or we can move forward. But then you bring individuals like Nick Palmer, who truly were born into life this way. And for me to sit back and fathom that is truly a harsher aspect to it, you know, because, I had the non-understanding of why I ended up where I'm at, but he was born that way. And, you know, like you said, he thought he was normal until kids started pointing fingers and calling names. And, you know, that's got to be a harsh aspect at a young age, because I know what it is as an adult. And, you know, we've got to change this world. One thing this world is missing is truly in my heart, as far as I believe. You look back, we used to have great speakers, great people that came forward in life. You know, and if we don't have people like Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks or other individuals step up and stand against the system and show change and show people that we can come together with hope and all, you know, understand a greater being and greater asset of life, then we're really not winning. We're going backwards. You know, so we need somebody to stand up and be a voice for the society, for the community, for the world, because it'll create change. If we can change one person at a time, we can change the world. On that note, I'm going to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, tremendous brother, you know, the 86ers.net, a charitable organization that is just beyond belief, you know, in my heart. And then Jacob Stitch Duran, Juan Ramirez with Cutman for Hire, and Buy Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. You know, we all came together for one team, one dream, and we've created a tremendous asset in doing so, and I'm honored to be a part of this team, this family. On that note, I want to thank each and everybody for listening. I want to thank Nick Palmer for coming on, and as usual, I want to thank my mutual host, Mr. Ronald Mann. I got a little tongue-tied here at the end, but we're going to take it out with a little bit of El Dorado Jones. I don't know if you like rap music, but here we go. And you have a good day. God bless.
Yeah.
Got me sitting with a stone face, like a gargoyle on a steeple. Go my heart, that's Mando, the type of action that I plan for. Tattoo what I stand for, like, man, look at my hands, yo. Don't call, tryna waste time, talk loud on my FaceTime. I rock a ship over baselines, like Elijah, I'm from the baseline. Everybody wanna die about it till the shit get diabolical. Man,